Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're watching or listening to this podcast from. My name is Jade Sola Rawa, and this podcast, Solar Roundtable, is brought to you by Olon. And as usual, I mean, I want to say to you guys, like, oh, you know, today we're going to talk about marriage. Nah. We're still sticking with our topic, which is just around solar, climate, and things of that nature. But as usual, we have a very interesting guest for you today in the studio, and I'm going to introduce him by just telling his name, and then I'm going to let him introduce himself a little bit more. So please join me in welcoming Professor Olayinka Ohunakin. And I'm a Yoruba girl. Chai, wait, let me first be ashamed.
Yours is Yoruba, bro.
He's very Nigerian. Yoruba. Are you serious? I always, you know, I was going to ask you, that's a very interesting name.
Yeah.
So it's Ohunakin.
Yeah, voice of Bebele.
I've literally been pronouncing it as Ohunakin, and I was going to be like, where is that from? Ah, wait, please, give me a second to
don't
be ashamed.
Worry, don't worry.
My mother would be very embarrassed. Are you serious?
Honestly.
Ohunakin.
Yes.
That, I see how I'm pronouncing it well. Like, yeah. What?
Yeah. Hey, don't worry.
Professor, you're welcome.
Thank you very much.
And just, you know, very randomly, my daughter's name is Olayinka as well. So I have a soft spot for anyone called Olayinka.
Right. Yep. I'm sending that gift.
Yes, sir. Exactly. So before her. So let me start by saying, let me read a little bit from your bio, right? Because, you know, some days I sit down here and I'm thinking, ha, Daddy, kilo shake bella, yeah, but let's not talk about it. But let me read Professor's bio to you guys. Just a bit of it, things I picked up. So your bio is literally otherworldly. That was the word that came to my mind when I was reading it. Because you're a professor of mechanical engineering, professor of energy systems and thermal fluids, fellow of the College of Natural Resources in Berkeley. You're a visiting professor in UI, University of Ibadan, and the Pan-African University Institute in Algeria, and also University of Johannesburg, South Africa.
Thank you.
Prof, what is your why? Like, this is, your bio reads like out of this world. So what is the why for, you know, for the work that you do, and just generally all of the accomplishments that you, what made you, what is your why?
Well, I'm very restless. I'm always looking for knowledge and then looking for ways to give out to the system.
Yeah.
Maybe that has led to that.
Yeah, because
agendas are bridged. I just have to pick some.
Yeah, to pick, exactly. Because again, I mean, I did some research on you, so I know that that was very, like, you know. So, but I'm very curious about this one specifically. You're a professor of energy systems and thermal fluids. What does that even mean? Tell us a little bit about what your work in that space means.
If you look at energy,
yeah,
that's why we're alive as human beings. Are you getting me?
Yes.
Yeah, what are we working for? Just to acquire energy, to make life more comfortable. You may be thinking, I want to earn so amount of money. Everything you have earned is actually to acquire energy to yourself. If you look at it that way, so that makes energy to be of high priority for me to look into. So that is taking me to that aspect of my field, energy systems. And you can't detach that completely from thermal fluid, because that drives and, you know, and everything comes together to make life much more meaningful for we as human beings.
But, you know, so on this podcast, one of the things we try to do is break down really technical things so that the average man on the streets listening to this will be like, okay, I get it, right? Thermal fluids, what is that? Because I'm sitting here and my brain cannot even fathom it. Like, what is thermal fluids? What's that
Thermal
space?
And fluid. Thermal means heat.
Yeah.
Are you getting me?
Yes.
That's thermal system of heat. Then fluid, the movement of particle. This time around, talking of air or talking of liquid. So the two comes together as fluid. So we call, so that's what I'm saying, thermal fluid.
Fluids,
the heat. And then the movement of the heat or the movement of liquid or the movement. Let me say movement of mass. Let me say it that way. So that's what I define as thermal fluid.
Okay. All right. We'll get into that a bit more later, but let me ask you a question about, you know, the, like you said, everything that we do kind of like revolves around us being able to get energy to do what we need to do, live all of our lives essentially.
Yeah.
And we know that there was, you know, the fossil fuels that was driving everything up until a certain point. So let's say in the last decade or so, right? Things have kind of shifted a little bit. So now we're looking at, you know, the solar sector, which is, you know, I mean, it's not new, but you get what I mean when I say it's new with regards to energy and energy access and everything. So from your vantage point as someone that is so well versed in this field, what would you say has changed in the last decade or maybe two, you know, in the solar sector space as we know it?
Thank you very much. You see, actually, solar is not, the technology is not new. But a lot of persons are now beginning to see that, okay, yeah, awareness.
Yeah.
It's as old as the first space satellite launched into space.
Oh, wow.
Because it was powered. Space, you know, satellite actually being powered by solar cells.
Wow.
But the oil shock of the 70s actually heightened the need. Instead of, why can't we domesticate this technology? Told me, because the whole world knows that, okay, fossil as we likely failed. Not even thinking of when it's going to peak. Okay, even let us assume that, okay, we continue to have this thing. Are you getting me?
Yeah.
Well, you discover that what happened in the 70s, especially mid-70s, as far as fossil, especially crude oil, and then the dynamics and
world,
shows that this is not something that is going to last humankind. It will fail us at any time. So let's begin to look for alternatives. That is what is actually bringing us to this aspect. Solar and then quite a lot of other renewables. Wind has actually been deployed for more than 1,000 years.
Yes.
You know, the movement of ships using, you know, wind or, you know, to power through the suspension of mast.
Yeah.
You know, to power. And then you discover, okay, all this energy, can't we? And in, you know, thermodynamic energy can neither be created nor destroyed. You're only moving from one point to the other. You can only transform it or you randomize it. So that is what has brought us to this level. Now we are looking at renewable. And, you know, of all the renewables, you discover solar is actually gaining traction. Maybe that's what we're going to look into.
Yeah. Oh, you know the way you said energy can neither be created nor destroyed? It took me right back to secondary school. Oh my God. I'm sitting here, I feel like I'm actually in class and I'm talking to oh, that took me back. Oh, Jesus, I'm old. But okay. So yeah, you're right. So I have a question off of that question though. So like you said, there's other sources, right? Including wind and things of that nature. So why do you think that? So no, let me rephrase this.
I've not even completed your... I think you went ahead to say the last
10. In the last 10, yeah. Like, you know, how has it changed? How has the sector changed? But before you even come back to answer that, I think my question of the answer that you gave is, so in the 70s we discovered fossil fuel, right? So everybody,
it has been discovered
way before that time,
way before.
Yeah, but you know,
actually fossil actually more like served as the catalyst to the industrial era. Yeah,
so we all latched onto it. Yes. Right,
coal, so, starting with
coal, yes,
that, you know, actually propelled the first and the second world war before we discover crude oil.
Fantastic.
Like that.
So now do you feel like we're kind of repeating the same cycle by latching onto solar and not necessarily giving the other sources, do you know what I mean, my
concentrating our effort on solar?
Exactly, because I'm thinking, like, you know, at a point we concentrated it on fossil and then now it's solar. Why do you think that we're not exploring the full complement of energy sources that we could, as opposed to, like, you know, it's almost like we move from one, then we latch onto this one, then we get to a point, then why do you think that is?
If you look at this part of the world, there's something they call bandwagon effect. What works there? Okay, this thing is working here. Let us also go there.
Yeah.
And if there is deviation, now let us go this way. You know.
Yeah.
Maybe very soon, maybe some years to come, maybe 10, maybe 20, you know, economy of scale might have assisted some other energy sources. And then the cost per kilowatt hour of their exploitation or generation of power from them might have gone down. Talking of hydrogen,
yeah,
these are the new areas that we are looking into. You get it. Yeah. And quite a lot of hurdles that have not yet been explored, you know. Wind, you know, a lot or little is discussed about that.
Yeah.
Anyway, there are reasons for that, you know, which may not be within the scope of what we are going to discuss today. I think we are looking at solar.
Yeah. We're
kind of looking at that time, maybe.
Definitely. We definitely have to have you back because all of this knowledge, we need to like talk about it. Okay. So I think one of the other questions that I have for you is climate change, right? Which is also something that, you know.
Yeah, you said something that the last 10, 20
years. Yeah, in the last decade or so, like how has that sector, how has the solar sector
actually specifically changed? Very, very encouraging.
Fantastic.
When people started looking into solar, a lot of projects that were done then actually, you know, a lot of guys had to run away. You know, but the technology, if you look at the transition over the years, has actually been domesticated.
Fantastic.
So it's a sector that has evolved over the years, solar sector in particular, and a lot of government initiative and private sector involvement has also assisted in the rapid deployment of the technology. You know, so look at all the mini grids that are springing up here and there.
Absolutely.
So many off-grid solutions to meet the underserved, you know, communities.
And unserved.
Even the, you know, I'm even saying underserved, even cities are now being powered. A lot of households are now having rooftops and then, you know, stand alone beside their house to supply power because we can't rely on the grid again, you know. Before, maybe the model is, okay, we have a grid and everybody comes out.
Yeah.
Initially, it used to be the simple or the single that were brought together. Let's have a grid.
Yeah.
But the grid can't cope again with the population.
Yeah.
I think as of today, what are we, about 235 million.
Oh, wow.
So we can't all be on the grid. No country tries that. So we have a lot of models that we must all bring together to have that access to energy.
Fantastic.
You know, so it has actually evolved over the years. You know, if you look at mini grid and then off-grid solutions, as actually that space has exploded. You know, though grid connected is still trying to find its footing.
Yeah.
We have some, you know, patches of interconnected. I know one, you know, deployed by GVE.
GVE
Fine.
To
power Wuse Market.
Yes.
To supply the power to Abuja Disco.
Yeah.
So that is one and few. You know, but I'm very sure with the legislative framework that is now in place, especially with the Electricity Act of 2023, that, you know, got amended recently, about a couple of weeks, maybe 1-2 weeks ago, the space will definitely expect explosion in the space.
Hallelujah.
That's one.
Hallelujah. I hear you, and I'm excited for that. So now looking at climate change, right, which is also something that you're very well versed in, and how it alters solar resource patterns, right? So cloud cover, heat waves, dust, rainfall, and things like that. How much do you expect, you know, because right now everyone's talking about climate change and how things are changing. How much do you expect that that's going to affect, you know, the trajectory of solar as an energy source in the future?
Thank you very much. You see, the way we are as human beings, we see problem, it's either we adapt or we solve the problem. So climate change is actually a problem. It's there. It's going to be with us for centuries. Even if we stop emission today, you know, there's something we call the ocean heat content. It has actually, you know, a lot of the warmings, you know, that we have, it has absorbed so much to the extent that if you stop emission today, for centuries to come, maybe
the effects will still be felt.
The effect will still see that we could, because this is energy. You can't create it, you can't destroy it. So it's stored. It will still continue to warm and then it expands and you still continue to have that sea level rise.
Yeah.
Now, let us now look at that. When talking of climate, really, we look at the past. Maybe we look at the pre-industrial era. What was happening then? Then we look at, we may look at the pre-industrial era or the Mesozoic era when we have the dinosaurs and the likes. How were they living then? Then we do compare that with what we have now, today. How is the situation like today? Then we now use the tool to now look into the future. How will it be like by 2050? by 2100. So that can only come through models. We have quite a lot of models that we are using. You know, if you are in a Western country, you know, you have to check your calendar, or your weather or whatever, to see that, okay, I'm going out tomorrow by 2. Do I need to go with my
umbrella?
You know, and you discover if it says, okay, there'll be precipitation by 2. By 2, of course, it will. So that is advancement in, you know, all this try to predict and then the future, which is actually working. Now, if you look at the impact, why I'm saying we are human beings and then we adapt and then we try to correct the ones that we have the capacity to correct is, the impact is there. It will come. Now, let me look into some impact. Okay. Some extreme events like heat wave.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at heat wave, of course, we're having it now. Yeah, it's absolutely more prevalent in the northern part of the country.
Yeah.
You understand? You can. If there was a time in the UK, a lot of guys had to jump into Thames, River Thames, and then, you know, because of the sudden spike.
If
you look at solar collectors, or let me say PV, they are characterized by manufacturers, or, you know, must characterize, you know, solar modules against some conditions. Cell temperature of 25 degrees centigrade, hair mass ratio of 1.5, and then irradiance of 1,000 watts per meter square. Then that's, you know, these parameters are being used to standardize. So any temperature rise above that from the ambient environment, the power will drop. Power drops.
Okay.
So now look at the northern part of the country where you can have temperature as high as 40. 60.
Yeah.
40, 50, maybe you have some heat wave that way. You know, this thing goes as high as 60 degrees. Now you are exceeding 25, which is the cell temperature. So you should have maybe about 15, 20, 25%, you know, reduction in the power that comes out.
So wait, hold on, Prof. Because just quick question. I always thought that people would say, oh, you know, if you're using solar panels, for instance, right, the more sunlight you have and the hotter it is, the more optimal. So that's not how it works.
It's different from the insolation or the radiation.
Okay.
It's different. That's, you are the thermal range.
Okay.
Or the infrared. I mean, yeah, you are the thermal range. You understand? That is when you are talking about the heat.
Okay.
You understand? It affects the power that comes out. That's why in countries where they have floating solar PV, performance is far, far better, more than times 30% over where we, because cooling is consistent. You understand?
So as the panels flow on, they get cooled, and then
the power, you know, you discover that you may be operating at the rated power. You can't exceed the rated power of the model. You understand? If this is 500 watts, you can't exceed it. But you may be close, and you may be very, very far, 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 far below what it should generate. So there are so many factors that are responsible for that. So heat is something. But, you know, I said something earlier. I said we human beings, it's either we adapt or we solve the problem or we live with it.
Yeah.
You know, R&D now, there are quite a lot of other panel types. The N type now, you understand, is more thermotolerant. You understand, there is little reduction compared to the common P-type modules that we have in the market. You understand? But that is also going to impact on the economics at the end of the day.
Yeah,
because you'll be looking at, okay, the capital, the initial investment cost, of course, will tower high more than the conventional one. And there may be operation and, you know, the O&M cost later on, you know. So that is on the aspect of the heat wave. You understand? Let us look at, okay, you know, climate change has actually, we caused it actually, you know, nature never allows that, but we have actually caused it, and then we have to live with it, or we solve the ones we can solve and then we leave others, you know. So, but if you look at it now, you discover that climate change is actually, it has altered there's something we call the intertropical convergence zone. Are you getting me? So it has actually altered it. So the alteration, you see the effect on the precipitation. You see the effect on the cloud cover. Are you getting me? So air is now, you know, becoming warmer. And then they are now having tendency to absorb more moisture. So you discover that the cloud is now becoming denser. And that is now, since it's becoming denser, and that is the cloud, the pattern, it's, you know, it's in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Now, the radiation is coming from the outer space. You have the sun as the main generator.
Yes.
Whatever that is, you know, happening there, you know, it varies across the year. But from the sun, So the entrance to the earth, or let me say to any of the planets, you have vacuum. So you don't expect losses there. But as it enters the earth, a lot of other factors, forces begins to act on it. You understand? Now, what are these forces? You discover that, let's assume that, okay, 10 is coming in from the outer space yes. to the earth. Forces act on it to either scatter it, to absorb it, and then what you are having that is falling on your
collector. Maybe a 6.
Not even 6. Maybe depending on the nature of the space and then the environment where you are there, may even be 2.
Whoa.
So instead of 10 acting your collector, and then, you know, even you look at the efficiency of the collector, how high is it? Maybe you have 15%. So conversion, you know, rate. So you are now having to convert 2 that is falling on the collector. All others has been scattered or absorbed. So with the thick or denser cloud, you should expect more absorption and less available for your solar panel. So you have the facilities, but it's not generating so much. Are you getting
yes.
That is one. You can also have some other extreme events. You know, we are losing the north now to desertification. Let me say desert encroachment. Yeah, yeah. Sahara is now coming down. And this is shifting the wind pattern.
Whoa.
So Amatan is now becoming very aggressive and aerosols. So you are now having more particles that we also hate in scattering the irradiance back to the outer space. Mm. So you're having less to be converted by your collector. Are you getting
yes.
Now, then you can have dust, also particles settling on the... All these we hid in what? Reduction in what is available for you to be converted to electricity. As far as PV is concerned, because we have so many other technologies that are associated with solar. But we are used to PV.
I feel like I should have brought my biro and I'm like taking... just like a PhD class right now. I'm probably going to change my name to Dr. Jade when we're done. By virtue of this conversation.
That's a very good one.
Oh, wow. I've been in this space for a decade at least. I've never thought about, I'm not a technical person. My job is more not, you know, but just hearing you speak about those things, there's so many factors that I've never even considered or thought about, you know, that kind of thing. And these are the realities. And that's just amazing. But I still have another question for you. And it's still kind of like centers around the whole climate change. So one of the things that off of what you're saying is, how does climate change, how is it not reshaping solar projects, right? And the economics of it. And I think you kind of touched on it a little bit And you know, the systems design in Africa, because and I feel like to answer that question a bit would be the fact that, like you said, all of these forces, right, that are working on those things, you know, then it means that humans have to adapt and we have to like create more solutions that go outside of the norms of what we're doing now. So is there a policy, though? Let's talk about the policy aspect of things now. Is there a policy that can... What do you think is kind of like maybe a solution for this, you know, for how we need to adapt to this current change that all of these factors are bringing? Is it a policy-driven solution? Is it like, I know you mentioned R&D. Is it R&D-driven solution? How do we get to that next phase? Is it even an awareness solution, maybe off the, you know, getting people to understand, you know, that kind of thing, that it's no longer business as usual? If you were using this panel, then this panel is not going to deliver effective power.
One thing is technical problems. Of course, you solve it technically.
Okay.
There may be some policies to assist, you understand, but you need technical solutions first.
Yeah.
Are you getting
it? Yes.
So part, a lot will come through R&D. That's why I said, okay, the N-type and then the P-type, the indigenous type that we're able to do. So we are now having some thermotolerant models. Now.
Okay.
Are you getting
it? Yes.
So now look at, okay, some other extreme. Now all these, because I heard something like economics.
Yes.
So there are some keywords there, climate, economics, and then maybe...
policies, you know, or whatever, and the like. Systems design.
Now,
yeah.
If you are having to now switch from the ones you are used to another one that is more resilient to this impact, of course, you should expect that you go with higher costs.
Yes.
So the capital expenditure, the capex, of course, will increase per unit of what compared to the previous one.
Absolutely.
You understand?
Yes.
That is one. Then number two, other than... what about the cost of oppression? You understand?
True.
The environment is becoming, you know, climate change has made the environment to be very, very, very volatile.
Very.
So all these you know, collectors are going to now react to manage this volatility, yeah, determines what comes out of them. Are you getting me? So what about the process of, okay, you have installed it, and then the operations, the other, you know, component along the, you know, chain that makes up that, how do they react to this? Yes. So you discover that you are spending money too. That means your O&M or the OPEX is also right.
So.
So it's going to impact on the economy, yeah, but we get used to it. That is it. There was a time we said, okay, no, subsidy gone. I love that anyway.
I was a fan of
of that.
Yes.
Subsidy gone, and then people had to, okay, we cry for, and then we get used to it. Nobody's talking about it again.
Absolutely.
Yes,
yeah.
That's how we human beings are actually wired to behave. You react, and then you look for solution, and then, you know, you live with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've talked a bit about, you know, solar and, you know, kind of like the advantages and where we're going with it and, you know, the future for it. But I want to ask you a question about, is there one solar technology that people underestimate currently, in your opinion? And how should African countries balance that PV expansion with alternate solar technologies? So I think it's a twofold question. Is there something that you feel like, you know, we're not giving the attention that we should? And then how do we, as, you know, as African countries, right, how do we then balance the expansion that we have currently with whatever alternate technology?
All right. Now, solar. You look at it from two angles. PV converts the irradiance directly to electricity. We still have some other applications, solar thermal application, heat. Look at the power plant at Egbe. It's a thermal station. You are firing the boiler with gas to generate superheated steam that turns a turbine. The turbine is coupled to a generator. Electricity comes out. That's the way it is. Now, you are using gas or maybe diesel or whatever to fire your boiler. Now, let us assume that, okay, instead of using gas to fire the boiler, you are now concentrating the sun
to fire the boiler,
which is possible. I knew when I was young, we used to have this as a convex lens, and then we use it to converge on there, and then you discover it burns paper.
Yeah.
So that means there's massive energy content in the sun. So let us converge it to the boiler, and then we use that to produce superheated steam that turns a turbine. That's a technology. Are you getting me? So that's a solar thermal technology. It's actually, you know, but once, okay, that's concentrated solar plant.
Yeah.
You know, concentrated. But you see, solar PV will actually live with us till eternity, because one, it has, other technologies have also been domesticated. But in the case of the concentrated solar plant, it is geo-restricted. Are you getting? Mm-hmm. We can't have it in a place like Greece, but maybe the far, far northern part, close to the Sahara, can have it. Because the irradiance that you see has components. You understand? Mm-hmm. We have the direct component. We have the diffuse. You understand? Then we can have global solar radiation. PV works more with global solar radiation. Are you getting?
Yeah.
At the horizontal surface. But the concentrated solar plant, which is a thermal plant, mm-hmm, where you have freshness or heliostat, mirrors that, you understand, actually works well with direct normal irradiance, the direct component. So, and it has, you know, a particular threshold. You may have to exceed maybe from 1,800 kilowatt hour per meter square upward. So, and these resources are actually geo-restricted. You can't have that here. So that is limiting, actually, the, you know, deployment of such a technology. We have in two countries in Africa, you know, the biggest worldwide, actually, is the one in Ouarzazate in Morocco, no project. You understand, using mirrors and then parabolic trough and the likes. But the beauty of concentrated solar plants, being a thermal plant, is that it gives dispatchable energy, not variable, that, you know, is associated with PV. I'm going to explain that. Now, dispatchable, and it can work 24 hours, even when the sun is not there. Because when it's, you know, the sun is out, giving very high sunshine insulation, it's going to, you know, it will be, you know, there are so many other than, you know, we have different types of storage, you know, storages, they're in different forms. No battery this time around. We use molten salt or the benzene oil in the case of the parabolic trough. So this stores the energy. So in the night, when this thing has gone down, you discover that what it takes over is a reverse process and continue to produce superheated steam that turns a turbine, and the turbine is coupled to generator and electricity comes out. So it is geo-restricted. It's only where you have the resources. What do I mean by that? You can't say, okay, this is Lagos. You can't say you want to set up an hydro plant in Lagos. Where is the river?
True.
Are you getting
it? I thought we had plenty of water, but maybe not.
Where is the river? So you have to go to where the resource or the particular of that capacity, with the history of that capacity, you know, before you can say, okay, let us take this technology. So that one is geo-restricted.
Lagos, the aquatic splendor. Let's not be ashamed of
But for PV, you discover that it, you know, relates with every level. You can just have a small one. Look at the solar home systems.
Yeah.
You understand from the small watt, solar torch, solar lantern, and quite a lot of other small applications. That is solar PV deployment to the mega one. But concentrated solar plant has advantage. It meets both base load and peak load. And meeting any form of load, inductive load. Inductive load will impact PV more. So in which case you may have to, you know, have a very, very, very good storage, you know, technologies. Maybe, and you spend so much money getting that, which will have actually been cheaper running that if you have it within the particular space, you know, that you think this thing can work well. You understand?
Yeah.
So quite a lot of, you know, you just play around the dynamics.
And see what works. And see which one that works. Okay, so I'm going to say a few things to you guys listening to us today. Brains are not created equally. Talking with Professor Olayinka, I've just realized that, like, brains are not the same. Because I'm thinking to myself, the wealth of knowledge. Wait, I need to ask you this before we continue. I was going to ask you this at the end, but I feel like I have to ask you now. Do you ever feel like there's so much going on in your head? And like, do you ever feel like there's so much going on in your head and you're like, there's so many thoughts that you have and there's so much knowledge? You know, you said at the beginning that you like to acquire knowledge. Do you ever feel like there's no space left in your brain?
Oh, I've never thought about that. Let me boost it no more. Yeah, I keep retraining myself, different technologies that you know that are around.
You know, this is one of those moments when I have to be like,
thank you.
Because I'm just in awe of the amount of information that you have. And I do understand this is your area of expertise, this is your field, but it's humbling to speak to someone like you. And they're gonna have to change my name in that office. I have to put doctor in front of my name, because after talking to you, I feel like me myself, I'm on fire with the things you know. So I mean, as we gradually like get to the end of this conversation, I have a question, and this is more on the economic side of things, right? And I guess maybe I'm interested in that as well, because, you know, at Ollon, we're an impact investment firm and we put money into the space, you know, just generally for the development of the ecosystem. So this question is around that space. What is the one investment trend, right, that you feel like is important in the solar space, right, that in the next maybe say decade or so will have meaningful impact? I mean, just to preempt you, I think off of this conversation that we've had and what we've talked about so far, I would say that you probably say like R&D is very important, because like you said, you know, we kind of have to adapt to how things are changing, even within a space that we all think is fairly nascent and very new, but things have already even moved beyond what we started with in that space. So what would you say is one thing that, you know, you feel like, you know, we need to get our investments towards, right, within that whole solar space that would make significant change or, you know, contribution in the next decade or so?
That's a very good question. I want to sincerely appreciate the federal government for the Electricity Act of 2023 that was recently being amended.
Yeah.
It has actually...
We kind of contributed to that, so we're very
happy. I know. So it has actually opened up the space legally. So a lot of private sectors, private involvement, private investment, and, you know, private actors are now coming in.
Yeah.
Now, look at it this way. You know, there is this piece of document, you know, that actually transformed the power space, which is the EPSRA, Energy Power Sector Reform Act of 2005, March. that unbundled or that repealed the act that established LEPA.
Yes.
Thereby unbundled that we have the generating, transmission, and then the distribution.
Yes.
So generating companies, distribution privatized, but this is still being held down by the federal government. And that has now been, you know, unbundled through the Electricity Act of 2023. That means the transmission. Yeah. So state and then private entities, they have all it takes now. You are free at liberty to generate, if you want to generate.
Yeah. Distribute.
To transmit and to distribute. Though, before that, you know, of course, we know that we need that to be done. Mm-hmm. A lot of, you know, because we've actually grown. The abstract is a very actually, you know, chart the path for what we are discussing today.
Yeah.
But it became so whole that you know that, okay, there will be a lot of other regulations came out of it. Yeah. And then that you don't even have to, as a customer, you don't even have to wait for the transfer. You can actually liaise with a generating company and rent a line and buy your power directly. You understand?
Yes.
You, that is all right. But now we have the Electricity Act of 2023. Are you getting
me? Yes.
That is going to impact on the transmission. The transmission that we have can't actually take the load that is on it. I mean, the population of about 230 something million.
Yes.
And then on this, the capacity alone, other than the capacity is so weak, it's not resilient. Other than, you know, it's not resilient. It can't take power that is fluctuating, that is associated with variable renewable energy sources like solar, like wind.
Mm.
It cannot. You see it collapsing. But with this new act now, you discover that what we should expect: increased capacity of the transmission. The transmission is expected to be more robust, flexible, and resilient to, you know, with so many technologies. So this comes in. So with that, you discover that what a lot of actors are now coming in. So I'm looking now to your question. That one may be okay. A lot of it, for example, you look at off-grid,
yes,
and then mini-grid, you discover that it has, that space had exploded.
Yes.
From what we used to have maybe some 15 years ago, you know, when you see the first mini-grid I visited was Gbamu Gbamu.
Yes.
Built by Rubitech.
Rubitech,
it was then, you know, Gbamu Gbamu became more like a mecca. It you know, a lot of people going there. It's no longer something that is, you see it everywhere.
Yeah, you see it, exactly.
You
it's
see
not
it in
noble.
Hundreds has actually developed over the, you know, especially with the assistance of the Nigerian electrification project of the World Bank and the African Development Bank.
Okay.
Now, that space. Now, what are we doing as far as grid-based distributed energy resources? You understand? That may take, you know, more prominence the next 10 years. That may have to. Yeah, because look at it. You know, unlike solar now, the way we see it, the way people see it is not something that is going to be an alternative or backup to when power fails. No. It's now part of the national energy strategy.
Yeah.
It's now a source of power.
Power.
Are you getting
it? Yes, absolutely.
So the way it is like that, you should expect discourse instead of running away from solar developers to actually relate and partner with them. Okay, you these guys, we have this estate here. We want to power the estate with solar because the cost of diesel is actually, the cost of gas is actually on the very high side per standard cubic meter. So the only thing we look into is solar, and then the price of the module is dropping astronomically. So can we do that?
So those conversations need to start happening. Yeah.
So that is something which is grid-based. You understand?
Yes.
Renewable, or let me say solar applications.
Yes.
That will actually be something that we should be looking up to with the enabling environment legally. Then we should look also to something like intelligent battery energy storage system.
I feel like I should be taking notes.
You understand? Yes. Very intelligent one. You understand that, you know that, okay, I'm going to. Now, when you are generating, okay, you have your solar on your rooftop. You are not at home now.
Yeah.
And of course, you know that, okay, you are not using, there's no load to take what you are generating. We call it curtailment.
Yeah.
How do we manage curtailment? It's either you increase your battery bank and then you are now storing it and then until it exceeded, you know, depending on what you have.
Yeah.
Instead of having that, with this electricity act and a lot of other things, for example, like the net metering framework that is being put in place by NAC now, you should expect that storage will go down in that, and then the grid will now serve as more like a virtual storage. So when you now have intelligent battery energy storage system, you can think of, okay, let us power this estate. Let's power Lekki with this.
Oh, gotcha.
Are you getting
me? Yeah.
That is another aspect. Talking of the economy.
Yeah.
Now, things are also shifting from, because there's no rocket science in solar technology, all this that we see around.
Yes.
You know, the technology has already been domesticated.
Yes.
You understand? Unlike when we started, that we have quite a lot of cattle, you do have some standard product in the market, thanks to sun that has actually assisted us in that, you know, that particular regard. You discover that we also need, you know, this issue of, okay, you import and install.
Yes.
A lot of actors, you know, I know this guy, Solinter. I think there was a time he opened, you know, a solar, you know, manufacturer, a solar
assembly. So assembly. There's Oxano. Oxano. Yes.
And I know Femi Adeyemo.
Yes. Energy.
So
yeah.
Having Inverter as his own, you understand?
Yeah.
So I think that will take prominence now with a lot of actors, private guys.
Coming
together to have assembly plants.
Plants, yes.
To have assembly plant of quite a lot of you know, battery, because battery may be a problem in future because of the heavy metals that they are made up of, lead and then the likes, mercury. So you have recycling hubs. All these are the new areas that we should be looking into the next couple of years. So, and we do things fast in Nigeria.
Yeah.
We are very fast. As the way God created, you should expect maybe if you're saying 10 years, maybe expect the next 5 years.
Yes, for this to happen. And I'm glad you said that, because these are actually some of the things that we're also looking at in Olon. For instance, I know that one of our plans this year is to work what's the circular economy space and that kind of thing. How do we make sure that, you know, all of these solutions don't become a problem in the future? How do we make sure that, you know, like, so that's something that I'm proud of.
Economy is just coming on board.
Yes.
You know, in engineer, I always tell people, they say engineers, we are solving problems. I say, okay, now we solve problem, but unknowingly we create
other problems. Yep.
Later on, maybe some years, we now discover.
Yep.
That. So that's it.
So exactly.
That's how we are human. Beings.
Yeah.
We keep and then we keep solving.
Exactly.
That's it.
I could talk to you forever, but I have one more question for you before I let you go. And it's interesting that, you know, the question is kind of connected to one of the things that you mentioned, which is about standards. And, you know, you talked about how Sun is doing a really good job making sure that standards make sense and everything. So, and I know that just in my time in the space, I know that there's been so much improvement in the last few years. You know, going on the issue of, you know, standards, people complain that they bought something and it stopped working within 2 minutes. But, you know, there are loads of companies now that are putting out really great quality. So how do we, I guess my question is, I can't say how do we solve it, because it's a problem that is being solved. But when do you think that we'll get to the promised land where we're all confident? As a lay person, I can walk into the market and I know that whatever solution I'm getting is solution that has gone through the rigors of making sure that it's up to standard. You know what I mean? And I guess essentially, how do we help the common man to know that if they went into the market or to any, you know, to get any product, that product has been vetted and we know that, you know, there's no fear of, I got something that's, you know, we'll pack up in 2 days. When do you think that we'll get to that point? And what do we need to get to that point where we're confident that the resources out there in the space?
Yeah, thank you very much, Ejade. You see, Nigerians, they say we God created us. We adapt easily.
We are very special.
Very special breed. You know, maybe that's why I love being a Nigerian. If there's anything like coming again, if
you see what to be a Nigerian,
I will be a Nigerian.
I'm sorry about that one. I'm going to have to think about it a little bit.
An African.
African, yes.
So
we'll stick
anyway,
with
this is where I'm going. You discover that. Thank God you said something. You said we are not where we used to be.
Yes.
The moment we discover a problem, we continue to work on it.
Yes.
Look at all this energy efficient bulb.
Yes.
I remember when we started moving into it. We did a project there funded by a grant from the UNDP.
Okay.
I was then a consultant for them. The lighting bulbs, energy efficient bulbs. we went and then we bought all existing energy efficient bulbs from
in the market. Lab.
We bought everything.
Wow.
We got testing equipment. You know, one is domiciled at NCEC, University of Lagos, the other one with the standard organization. We tested everything. You discover that some were labeled 20 watt. We found that those 20 watt are actually not 20 watt, not up to that. So Sun came in and told them, look, the time of, just like in the Bible, the time of ignorance, God winked at, we are going to overlook this.
Yeah.
Now from henceforth, they trained everybody, all importers, you know, for all this. From henceforth, we pick you up. You'll be the one to pay for the cost of the destruction of this. You understand? We're going to. So you discover that thereafter, quality is hitting the market.
Yeah.
If you look at our attitude as human being, I always tell people, all my boys, they know, you know, we believe in free lunch. You understand? You never know if you, I mean, a lot of time we don't think that somebody has paid for it.
Yeah.
It has to be free lunch. Free lunch or whatever. So free lunch goes with low quality or no quality.
Oh,
so I think there will be shift in the way we think. And at that point, I think quality now drives the system. That's the way I see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a stage. And I'm very happy because it's moving rapidly.
Yeah.
It's a stage that is moving rapidly. And people are now becoming aware. You know, the awareness is there. Look, let's go with quality.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. I remember when this document, standard and label for, you understand, appliances were being prepared by standard organization. Of, I was actually part of it to some, you know, stage. You discover that we have different, you know, labels. If you are going for 5-star rating,
yes,
that is the costliest.
Yeah.
Then you have 1-star, that is the least. Mm-hmm. But okay, the costliest lasts longer. And it's highly energy efficient. By the time you have used up this 5-star, you will have used times the 1-star.
10 of the 1-star, yeah. Yeah.
So people are now, oh, let me sacrifice and go.
And go for, yeah, absolutely. So as it should be.
Yes, people love quality now.
Absolutely. And I'm, you know, I think that's a, you know, a fantastic place for us to, you know, to end the conversation, because I always say that, you know, people say that, I mean, my personal view on things is, look, like you said, I'd rather know that, okay, these are my options. Let me look at my pocket and say, you know, but it's that place of deceit where most people think that they are buying the best quality that there is, you know, not understanding that, you know, someone's decided to, you know, cut corners and, you know, give them the lowest quality or whatever. And they think that, you know, and that's where, you know, that's where the challenge was and everything. And like you said, I think with the work that SON is doing, you know, there's been a lot of improvements in that space. And, you know, I'm just thankful for organizations like that. I'm thankful for people like you, you know, that are just making sure that, like you said, you know, you're constantly working to make sure that, you know, there's more information, there's knowledge out in that space. And I think that we see the result in how, you know, the whole space has generally improved in the last decade or so. So yeah, I'm like I said, when I get to the office today, I'm just gonna be like, you guys, please call me Dr. Jadi, because what I have learned talking to you in the last 30 minutes, I'm sure people pay a lot of money to get this knowledge. So thank you very much for honoring our invitation to come on Solar Roundtable and talk to us about, you know, what the space is. I think this is probably like one of the more technical ones that we've done, but it's also a very enjoyable conversation, you know, because I'm listening to you and I'm getting it and that kind of thing. And, you know, like I understand where you're coming from and what you're saying. And I hope that, you know, we're able to convey that message to all the listeners. So again, Professor Onwuaki. Ha! Ha! My mother must not watch this episode, because the way I muttered your name at the beginning,
I'm a fast learner,
exactly. So that's, I'm like, yeah, they call me Dr. Jadi from now. But thank you, Professor Onwuaki, for coming. Thank you very much. It was a great experience talking to you. And I hope that when we invite you for like part 2.
Any other day.
Hallelujah.
Just let me know on time.
No problem. Exactly. With all of the things that you have.
Okay, when you reached out today, I was in Cape Town.
Yeah. And, you know, we've been trying to get you for a minute, actually.
I came,
yeah.
And you
were supposed to go to Algeria.
Algeria, but I had to. Look, yeah. You guys, let me meet you online.
Yeah.
Because I was too tired.
Yeah, I can imagine. So thank you very much. We're very privileged that you were able to join us today. And yeah, hopefully we'll talk to you again very soon.
All right.
So that's how we come to the end of this episode of Solar Roundtable, brought to you by Olon. It's been a like this whole thing has enhanced the quality of my life personally, just listening to all the different guests that we talk to. And I hope that as you listen and watch us, you're getting more and more experience and more information and knowledge about the whole solar and renewable energy space generally. So thank you, and I look forward to seeing you at our next episode of Solar Roundtable, brought to you by Olon. Ciao.
Thank you.